Totally Football Show. Today, League Cup, we ask, was Alexis voting leave, Alexit, if you will, the real reason for Arsenal's sudden boom? Of course, the team getting much better after a big name joins rival happens all the time in podcasting. While the Gunners join Man City in the Carabao Cup final, we'll look back on the midweek action and the other news, like bottom side Swansea beating the side that just beat the top side. There's also the latest transfer news, Man City's new record signing, Aymeric Laporte. Julian Aron will tell us whether Aymeric can hustle. Leeds and their new badge tribute to someone from First Order with indigestion. Phil Neville is something for the ladies. Nations League. Plus, from Hewish Park to Huddersfield, we look forward to a magical weekend in the company of the FA Cup. It's the Totally Football Show. Hey, everybody. Hello, listeners. We've got an awful lot to talk about today. And an awful lot to talk about it with, hey, Julien Laurent. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Yes. James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
Et aussi Michael Cox.
Hi, James.
Where do you want to start, Michael? Is it with the League Cup semi-finals?
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
All right, then. I've got Arsenal here. A 2-1 win over Chelsea. Eden Hazard putting the Blues ahead. And then that bizarre three-head-hitting equaliser before Granit Xhaka with the definitive scoring strike. Were Arsenal, Michael, I ask you, good or lucky?
Both. I think they were good and lucky in different respects. I think they were good defensively after a very poor start. It was an interesting game because this Arsenal-Chelsea mini-series, if you like, has always really been about how Arsenal cope with this Chelsea system. And they really struggled at the start with the four-man defence. They found Iwobi really being dragged back on the left. And at half-time, they changed things. They put Elneny into more of a defensive role, which he's played in pre-season. He played in the Europa League a little bit. And that change of shape, which is something that Wenger doesn't really do much, I thought really just meant Chelsea didn't have any threat for the rest of the game. Arsenal weren't so troubled by the wing-backs. I think.
So what exactly did Wenger do to respond to the Hazard?
I don't think it was Hazard so much. I think it was the wing-backs in the first part of the game that they couldn't deal with. Basically, if you're playing a four-man defence and Chelsea's wing-backs push forward, you're defending against five. It's a bit of an overload. And they switched that so that Elneny was pretty much the fifth defender and they didn't have so many problems. I think the caveat here is that they didn't really offer much going forward. I think Arsenal created one real chance, which was the Iwobi chance at a time when Chelsea were pushing men forward to get back into the game. So I think they stabilised the defence, but the goals really were lucky. I mean, the first goal was ludicrous, and the second one really was a fortunate deflection that Xhaka did very well to turn into the net. But I'd be a little bit concerned with the lack of creativity from Arsenal.
Arsenal, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wasn't what do you think? Much better from Chelsea, though, was it, really, in terms of creativity? Because even though they had that really good sort of first 25, 30 minutes, which they looked like they were going to build on that performance that they put in against Brighton, once Willian went off, they didn't really seem to have anything. They only had two shots on target. One was the goal. The other was after Arsenal's second goal. So right towards the end of the game. So again, sort of, you know, worrying for Conte, who again after the game was complaining that his squad just doesn't have the depth. Once Willian went off, you know, there was only Ross Barkley on the bench, who obviously is coming back from a pretty serious muscle injury. And you know, whilst that game was on, Roma were playing Sampdoria. Monchi, the sporting director, comes on before the game and says that so far, the offer that they received for Evan Dzeko, it's interesting how that situation seems to be changing at the same time as well.
Has that still not been confirmed? I thought it was overnight.
Given that what Monchi said before that game, which seemed to indicate that there was still some negotiating to be done, that maybe it was just a ploy from Monchi because he wants more money for Dzeko. Also, I think what you have to factor in here is Dzeko, who's completely been blindsided by this. You know, he bought a house in Rome in the summer, has really settled there, he's got two young kids, saw himself for the foreseeable future being there, and instead overnight has basically been said, by the way, we've got this offer in and we're thinking about accepting it.
Well, he played Wednesday night and scored for Roma in a 1-1 draw away at Sampdoria. As far as I know, I think the clubs have agreed terms, but he hasn't with Chelsea yet. Andrew asking, is there any particular reason why Conte has struggled so much against Wenger? Because he does seem to have a little bit of the edge on him, doesn't he, Michael?
Yeah, it's been a funny one. I'm not quite sure why, but it does seem to bring out the best in Wenger in a tactical sense. I thought that FA Cup final last year was one of the most controlled and impressive displays tactically I've ever seen from Arsenal, especially because they had their entire defence out. And Conte didn't really seem capable of changing things yesterday after Wenger's half-time switch. I was a little bit surprised he brought Pedro off. I think sometimes he's been a bit more attacking. He's put Pedro to wing-back, and Chelsea have come back into games well. But yeah, Chelsea didn't really offer anything last night. It was just a couple of long-range Alonso shots in the last 20 minutes that were well off target. It was a bit concerning from Chelsea. Yeah.
Right. But a fine win for us. I feel we've been a little bit down on them. How impressed were you? And how much stock do you put in this whole Sanchez bounce thing, which certainly Arsene Wenger was referencing afterwards when he talked about the team having more clarity now, more focus on the game?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, we talked about Alexis before and maybe the issues that there were in the dressing room in regards to him and his attitude and things like that. And for sure, him leaving, I think, has changed something in that dressing room. The problem that Arsenal had a lot before with Alexis, and it's a problem that teams have when they have one superstar player, is that everything, when they had the ball, had to go through Alexis. But Alexis is not that kind of player. So every time he was receiving the ball, he would either dribble sideways, which he did a lot, but also scoring goals and being creative at times. But without him, it's far more fluid. And I think that this is the one thing that Arsenal we are going to get from leaving him, and getting someone like Mkhitaryan, who is a much better Arsenal player than Alexis ever was in terms of movement, in terms of fluidity, in terms of what he does with the ball. Mm. So on that level, I think you could see already that without Alexis and the sort of shackles that Alexis was bringing to that team, because every time someone was on the ball, the first thing they were looking for was, where's Alexis? I need to pass the ball to Alexis. That's going to be different. And I think maybe yesterday, the lack of creativity a bit, I don't know, I mean, Ozil started really wide on that right-hand side in the sort of 4-3-3 formation. Then he had a bit more freedom in the second half, like Michael said, when Elneny went the sort of three at the back. But I think it's key for Arsenal to create chances and have Ozil in the areas where he can create something. It's hard for him to create something on the right hand side, for example. So, you know, that's something else that Wenger will have to find the right judgment.
Where are we at with the move for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang?
I think talks are still ongoing, very much. So the first offer was too low. It's a bit like the Chelsea Dzeko Roma thing. The 50 million Arsenal offered was 55 million euros was too low. Okay. They want 70 million euros. Oh. You could think that maybe at 60 they could do a deal, but then there's the Olivier Giroud question mark, because they want him on loan. Would he want to go? Would Arsenal let him go?
Oh, I think Dortmund want Giroud on loan, do they?
So I think Arsenal would let him go. I think he needs to play, because if he wants to go to the World Cup, he just can't be a number three choice for Arsenal, because that means he will never play for Arsenal if he stays and Aubameyang arrives.
Right.
So it'd be interesting to see what
he does. We've got, what, 6 days and six hours or something till the end of the January transfer window. Is this going to happen?
I think so.
You think Aubameyang will be an Arsenal player by February?
And Olivier Giroud, a Dortmund player.
Why don't they send Lacazette to Dortmund?
I don't think they want to, and I don't think he wants to either. Okay. But it's funny that you spend so much money on Lacazette and 6 months later on Aubameyang, and then you'll have Mkhitaryan and Ozil as well to play with Lacazette and Aubameyang somewhere. So, be interesting.
I think you're being charitable on Lacazette's chances of staying in the first team. If they play a front three, you've got to play Ozil, and presumably you're going to play Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan because you've just brought them in. And Lacazette, I think he started well. I've been quite disappointed by him the last couple of months. I think his movement's been quite poor. I think he's still a good player, but he can maybe do with a bit of a break. He looks a little bit like Lukaku and Morata. Just looks a bit jaded. Maybe could do with a bit of a break.
All right. Arsenal, anyway, into their League Cup final at Wembley. I think I'm right in saying Sasha Gurionov was responding to a tweet about this morning. They've been there 9 times in the last 4 years, and they've won all 9. Is that right, Julian?
Yes, the semi-final of the 3 FA Cups they won, plus the final they won, and then the Community Shield.
That's
as
quite
well,
a remarkable record. Of course, they've got to go to Wembley before the Man City League Cup final, and that's to play Spurs on the 10th of February. And my, won't that be a big game? Yeah. Anyway, before any of that, they've got to go and lose to Swansea next week in the Premier League. That's on Tuesday. Swansea are now back, of course. We'll have a little thing and talk about that.
Listeners, our partnership with Paddy Power helps to keep this podcast free. And speaking of free, when you join Paddy's Rewards Club, every time you place 5 bets of £10 or more on any sport in a single week, Paddy will give you a free £10 bet the following week. Sign up now at paddypower.com. T's and C's apply. Max £10 bonus per person per week. Specific odds required. Exclude shops and cashed out bets. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop.
Monday night. How football was this? Liverpool beating the top side, previously ending Man City's unbeaten run, and then going loose to the bottom side and see their own unbeaten run ended. But Swansea have been showing signs of this, haven't they? With just one defeat in 6 matches under their new Portuguese manager.
Yeah, he seems to have got them better organised in a defensive sense, which, to be fair, wasn't a massive problem for a lot of the time under Paul Clement, but the last few weeks of his tenure, they were looking quite scrappy. It was interesting, actually, Carver, how after the game, he gave a very thorough explanation of the way that they played in terms of sitting deep, transferring the ball through the Liverpool press and then playing out wide where he thought they were a little bit vulnerable to counter-attacks. He also gave quite a nice metaphor, I'm not sure whether you saw this, of saying Liverpool were a Formula One car.
They're like a Formula One car, but at 4 p.m. in London, it would be difficult to speed. They would be a car like any other. We needed to make sure there was traffic. We could not let them have open roads to drive in. He followed that up, I think, the next day by saying... we are still in hospital, but now we can receive visitors.
Did you see what he said about the transfer windows the week before as well? Someone asked him, you know, in terms of transfers, and he says, the boat is on the sea. So people were a bit, and then he goes, you know.
If only they'd signed Laporte, that would be brilliant.
Yeah. And then he says, you know, we've put the hooks. He couldn't find the word for hooks as well.
Okay.
For fishing. So he said, we've put the, what's the name? So the guy said, the hook. So yeah, we've put the hook in the sea.
Right.
And now we're waiting. So someone is then asking him another question. He said, oh, no, I'm not on the boat. I'm on the beach.
Waiting to see what the catch is.
So no, but I think he maybe meant that he was not involved at all in the transfer dealings Swansea
doing. He should have said, I think we're going to need a bigger boat.
He clearly loves those.
He's brilliant, though.
I mean, I like him a lot.
There was the one with the banknote earlier when he was at Sheffield Wednesday. Do you remember that? Where he was asked how his team would respond after a defeat or something along those lines. He took a £20 note out of his wallet and basically kind of pretended to tear it up and banged it and screwed it up and then took it apart again and said, look, it's still a £20 note, which was the metaphor of how they were going to recover.
That's brilliant. It's a magician, essentially.
Yeah.
All right, they're 3 points from safety now, Swansea, but there's the basis. As you say, the big issue of conceding loads of goals does seem to have been resolved.
Well, it was only in the last few weeks under Clement they conceded a lot of goals. The early part, they did have a good defensive record. And to be fair, a little bit like what I said about Arsenal earlier, tactically they're very good defensively, but they didn't offer anything going forward. They had one half chance that happened to go in, so I'm not completely convinced he solved their problems, which is not scoring enough goals.
Also, just like Arsenal... Is it coincidence that this upturn has come since they've taken Sanchez out of the team? Renato Sanchez.
he's not playing very well, is he? But to look at it from a Liverpool perspective, it's just so predictable Liverpool. You know, they were so good in that City game when it was a good open game, when they could press, when they could break in behind. They were genuinely outstanding in that game. And then they come up against a team who plays deep and they just don't have the tools to break them down.
But they don't have the tools. So is this the kind of game where you miss Coutinho? Against Man City, they're going to give you lots of space because they're playing their own game. But when you have a team that packs the defence, that puts, 10, 11 behind the ball, that's when you need...
someone who could score from outside the box.
to a certain extent, but this was a problem they had under Coutinho as well. And I never thought he was particularly effective at kind of prising open those deep defences. Personally, what I think that they need more is a kind of plan B as a forward. You know, Firmino was a little bit unlucky with that late-headed chance, and he is getting more of those poachers' goals. But you look at someone like Giroud at Arsenal, he's just been the perfect plan B over the last 2 years. And people spent 10 or 15 years saying... Arsenal, when they're up against a park defence, they don't have the plan B, and now they do. And I think Liverpool really lack that. You know, Sturridge isn't really that kind of player. So, you know, with Chelsea trying to get a player in that mould, I honestly think Chelsea would prosper really well with Giroud up front. He's fantastic.
Chelsea.
He's good in the air, but he's also good at feeding players as well. He's the perfect kind of hybrid, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite interesting because I think Chelsea are the team that put the most crosses in the box in the league. Obviously, we've seen Morata do very well in the air, much better than on the ground. But you look at some of the players, the one that they're most advanced negotiations with at the moment, Dzeko, he doesn't score headers. Doesn't he? I mean, for a big guy, he's someone who likes it to feet, likes to bring others into play, is good technically for someone of his size. He's not a good header of the ball. Hardly ever scores headers.
Okay. Virgil van Dijk, not the best of... That was his first league start, right?
He looked a little bit nervous, but I thought he looked a little bit shaky in the FA Cup game against Everton, where he scored the headed winner. But I thought, I mean, it's natural. He hasn't played much for the best part of a year, but... you know, it does take time to bed in to a defence, especially if you're kind of the centre-back and everyone's expecting you to solve the problems.
Sure. FA Cup for both these sides this weekend. Swansea are going to be at Notts County.
That's a tough... I think that could be an upset on the cards there, actually.
Right. Kevin Nolan's Notts County are currently second in League Two, but have lost their last two league games at home. How about that? Liverpool, meanwhile, are taking on West Brom, who they faced in the league last month, and it was 0-0. And Johnny Evans is a doubt, because also he might be leaving. Where's he going to go now? Not presumably Man City, if they're buying Laporte. Is he going to Arsenal? Yeah. Is it Arsenal?
Yeah, it's well possible.
What do you think about that, Michael? Because somebody was asking on Twitter.
Yeah, I think he's a really good centre-back. I'm surprised he's been at West Brom. No offence to West Brom. And I think Arsenal do need another body in there.
I'm not sure if no offence to West Brom covers that.
Well, I think...
it's too late.
I think he's a better player than being in a relegation fight. Uh-huh. And two, I didn't think he was really a classic Tony Pulis centre-back.
Right.
But he's a good player. I think Arsenal's problem, actually... I'm sorry to say this because I've been a big fan of him over the years, but Koscielny.
No.
I'm not sure he's got the mobility. I thought he really struggled the first 10 minutes yesterday. And
he's not been having a good season.
He's had some injury problems. He's a funny centre-back. He's so much about mobility and acceleration and turning and twisting. And I think they're going to at least have to manage his games, if not look to another option, I think.
Yeah, fitness has been a problem. He's never really been 100% this season. He's played... not being 100%. I know that happens with a lot of players, but, you know, it's not ideal. And he's 31. He turns 31 in September.
Michael's calling Notts County for the win over Swansea. But what about Liverpool-West Brom? Of course, Alan Pardew, he loves an FA Cup run.
Yeah, will he be doing his little dance on the sidelines at Anfield? But
please, no.
Look, Liverpool are unbeaten 19 games at home. So I would still say Liverpool can do this.
All right, then. OK, we'll talk more about the FA Cup later on. After this, though... I want to talk about the Lionesses.
Tweet us at The Totally Football Show and find us on Facebook, also at The Totally Football Show.
Big story in football land this week. Phil Neville, appointed manager of the Lionesses, England's highly successful women's football team, despite the fact that he never applied, has never managed, and his relevant experience of a women's game amounts to basically following some of them, as of last week, on the Twitter. Exactly the sort of appointment that you wouldn't expect after all that Mark Sampson business. Well, Carrie Dunn is a writer and seasoned observer of the women's game and author, of course, of Lionesses Roar. So obviously we didn't ask her. Instead, we got a man who since last week has been following some of them on Twitter. And apparently we have got Carrie Dunn. Carrie, is that you?
It is me, yes.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, so... as I say, is this exactly the sort of appointment you would not have imagined the FA making after all that mess with the last one?
I'm actually not that surprised. The safe pair of hands would have seemed to have been Mo Marley, who took over in the interim. The FA now say that she wasn't interested in taking over full time. They had a short list of, I believe, four candidates, all of whom ruled themselves out at some point over the past couple of months. And as I understand it, somebody in the media suggested as a joke that Phil Neville might be a good candidate, and the FA took it forward from there. So, yeah, I mean, the ongoing farce of the England managerial roundabout continues.
Well, I guess that's one of the key questions. A lot of people are saying Phil deserves a chance. There have been plenty of other managers who've started at the top and done really well. I guess you could make a sort of a case for Pep Guardiola being one of them. But how true is it that there weren't other options? Was it genuinely a kind of Mark Hughes scenario that who else is there for this job?
I mean, I think there were plenty of candidates who would have been interested had they known that the criteria the FA had originally set out wasn't actually being stuck to. So the FA advertised a couple of weeks ago for an assistant to the senior team, and the assistant has to be an experienced elite coach of women's football with experience of international level. And these were the criteria originally set out for the national, for the manager's role. And so now, obviously, Phil Neville has that job. He doesn't have that experience. So now the assistant has to have it instead. So as I understand it, there are some disgruntled candidates within the game who are thinking, well, had we known that it wasn't actually compulsory to have these skills and abilities, then we might have applied for it. And they've got the background in the women's game. They would know more about the international level competition as well. So, yes, it's quite an interesting development.
Mm. There are various concerns that people have. They include some tweets that Phil made some years ago and also some that more recent, generally of a kind of disparaging nature about a women's role and one very unfortunate bit of what I imagine would be termed banter. But in terms of the overall message, though, to the women's game, do you think that Where do you stand? Do you think he deserves a chance, or are you with the Women's Support Trust when they say that this essentially undermines the coaching pathway for women?
You know, I do think that there is an issue with the coaching pathway for women. We see that, you know, look at the Women's Super League. We've still got the coaches there, still mostly male. We've got very successful female coaches in Emma Hayes and Kelly Simmons, and obviously Hope Powell's back with Brighton. And yeah, I mean, I would like to see a woman managing the England women's side. I do agree that obviously the best person for the job should also, you know, be given the job. But I don't think Phil Neville is necessarily that person.
Yeah, it's not just the fact that he's a male candidate. It's the fact that he's a candidate without experience in the women's game, managerial experience, pretty much anything else that you'd imagine that you'd need for a job like this.
Exactly. I mean, the quartet of names that were originally linked to the job, John Herdman and Nick Cushing. So John Herdman was the very successful manager of Canada's women for a time. He's now moved over to manage the Canada men's side. Nick Cushing at Manchester City. Obviously, you know, if they'd got the job, you know, there's a reason for that. You know, they've got the experience in the women's game as well. I mean, I hope that Phil Neville does do well. He's got a fantastic squad. But I do feel a little bit twitchy about the fact that you've got people saying, oh, it's a great coup for the women's game.
Who's saying that?
Jim White said it on Sky Sports News.
I don't think that's a particularly widely held view, but interesting. Interesting all the same. Kerry, when will Phil's first game be with the Lionesses?
So I'll be at the start of March in the She Believes tournament out in the US. So it's a four-way tournament with America, France and Germany.
Mm. Will you be heading off to that, Kerry?
I hope so. So, yes, let's see what happens.
Here's another game we could chat about. Cardiff Man City. Because Man City had a little bit of a scare not too far away from Cardiff on the other side of the Severn estuary. On Tuesday, in their Carabao Cup semi-final, where there was that kind of rousing finale with Bristol pulling it back to 2-2 on the night, and they were a goal away from putting it into extra time. Remarkable stuff there from the Robins.
Yeah, they did really well again, against an even stronger City side than they played in the first leg, with the exception of Claudio Bravo, who continues to look quite incompetent, it must be said, in goal. But I'd be interested to see, sorry, this is slightly off the topic, but I'd be interested to see in the final whether Arsenal and City play Ospina and Bravo, because they look so much worse than their number ones. It's a big game. I understand you wanting to give your reserve keepers a run out, but it's a big game, a cup final. But yes, Bristol City were excellent. They pressed well again. And the goals they conceded really were a little bit unfortunate, or when they left themselves exposed, having tried to get back into the tie. So yeah, it was a good performance from them. And I imagine that Lee Johnson will be saying to his players, if you can play like that against City, you know, considering some of the Premier League teams have been thrashed, then, you know, make sure you're playing Premier League teams next season, because you can give it a real go.
Right, absolutely. Their form hasn't been the best since the turn of the year, but that might well be because of all this League Cup semi-final business that was occupying their minds. Anyway, this weekend for Man City on Sunday, it is the trip to Cardiff. Warnock v Pep, at last, Julien. can Cardiff do it? Can they end Pep's dreams of a quadruple?
Yeah, of course they can. Of course they can. I think.
Tell us why.
Because they've been really good at home in the Championship this season. They've been really good in the Championship full stop this season, which is what Warnock does. You know, he gets team promoted, and no one really expected them to be playing that, not that they're playing super football, but to be doing that well, even if they not always play well with the squad they have, and they're doing well. Again, it will be a lot down to the atmosphere there in Cardiff, which you can expect a very hostile atmosphere for City. The players will be well up for it, and that's a typical cup tie where Cardiff are going to go for every ball, every challenge. It's going to be relentless. They're going to put all the pressure on the guy who carries the ball, and then if City can respond to that sort of intensity and aggression, then I think they'd easy win. The problem is if they start being on the back foot a bit and not really respond well to that sort of intensity that Cardiff will put in the challenges, for example, then they might struggle a bit. But in terms of talent, obviously there's no match, but I think if Cardiff, you know, put that on the a very intense, hostile game, then, you know, can
Warnock happen. Against Guardiola.
It's going to be big.
City lost there in the Premier League during Cardiff's one season up, which was a surprise because Cardiff didn't beat many teams.
That's true. Cardiff have signed the Serbian Marko Grujic. Is that how I sound that? From Liverpool. Apparently he has to play at least 14 games this season, otherwise they will be financially punished by Liverpool. That's according to Neil Warnock.
There's a lot of clauses like that now in deals for young players especially, because you send them on loan for them to get experience and play. But a lot of the time we've seen loans where they've hardly played. So I can see why Liverpool said, okay, because there was a few clubs interested in him as well. He's a very talented, promising, you know, young midfielder.
Okay.
So he said, okay, you can have him, but we need to be sure that, you know, you play him. Otherwise, you know, you can go to another club.
Absolutely. So. Well, while Cardiff welcome him, for City, the big signing is Emerick Laporte. He's 23 years old and he's cost them $57 million. Is that a record, James Horncastle?
Well, no, we've already seen that record be broken this window by Virgil van Dijk.
Right.
It's a record for City, though.
A record for City. OK. Stein says, what do you all think about the upcoming transfer of Laporte to City? Is he worth it?
It's very interesting. He's very much a Pep player. Yeah, first he's left-footed, which is really rare for centre-backs, and so what's rare is expensive, usually. And he's a very good technical player. He carries the ball really well. He's better at carrying the ball than passing the ball. So you would see him more coming out with the ball from the back line into midfield, for example, which is what Pep wants,
right,
more than just, you know, making a 70-yard diagonal pass to De Bruyne or Sterling or someone like that. But very gifted technically, in that sense, very Pep player. And although he's quite tall, I think he's 6'2", he's not the most athletic and the most robust in terms of challenges and duels. So it'd be interesting to see how he cope with that in certain games. But in terms of the way City are playing, he's just perfect for the way they're playing.
See him and Stones. Two.
Would you have the two of them? Or does one kind of offer much the same as the other?
I imagine when you've spent $50 million on one and, what, $57 million on the other, that you expect both of them to play.
Right.
As Jules was saying, Laporte is a defender who defends on the front foot. You know, he is one of those players who thinks more about starting attacks than breaking them up. And his debut was he got his debut from Marcelo Bielsa, who, of course, is when Pep started his coaching career.
Well, he must have been awfully young then.
Yeah, he was. Well, I think
he played a lot of games.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about this transfer for a long, long time. Yeah, he's been someone that... Yeah. City have been linked with for years.
It's more than that. In August 2016, City and Bilbao had an agreement. The release clause at the time was €50 million, and now they've paid €65 million. But he said no at the time. He didn't feel he was ready to go to City back in 18 months ago. And clearly now he thinks that it's the right time. He also thinks that playing for Bilbao was an issue for him for the national team, for France. And that if he was doing the same performances for a bigger club like City, let's say, in the Champions League, which, by the way, he can play because he only played in the Europa League so far, so he'll be eligible for the Champions League for City, then maybe Deschamps will have a better look at him. Because right now, that's the interesting thing I was talking as well at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Deschamps doesn't really fancy him. So Pep clearly fancies him a lot. Deschamps doesn't. So it'd be interesting to see if he goes to the World Cup, for example, or if he doesn't. But only one caller so far for France in his career, and that was only to replace people who were injured or suspended. Right. But like you said, no cap, despite featuring a lot in the all the youth team since under 15, he's played for France every team.
All right. Man City, if they made this signing after not getting Alexis Sanchez, it probably worked out better for them, though. Is this a player that they needed more than the Chilean?
I would agree. I think they're shorter in that position than they are up front. I think it makes more sense than going for Sanchez.
I don't agree, actually.
Ha!
Ooh!
Yeah, they got four centre-backs. I know they're not all top class, but they got Stones, Otamendi, Mangala and company. I know the last two have their issues.
Right.
But they've only really got four players for the front three positions. They've got Jesus, who's out injured. They've got Aguero, Sané and Sterling. I don't really like Bernardo Silva in the front three. I don't think he plays well there. I think he's their best central midfielder, really. I think they want him there. I do think they need another forward. Whether, you know, it's not going to be Sanchez, but I do think they will try and get someone else in.
We'll talk more about the Cup later on, but now, a big announcement. Ireland. Number of live football shows taking place in the Irish capital is quite literally Dublin. There only is one, though, that will feature myself, you, James Horncastle, and you, Julien Laurent.
You know, You know, the other day, I said to James, are you coming to Dublin with us? No. And he got really stressed out. No, I haven't been told anything. I said, I'm sure. No, they haven't said anything. I said, I'm sure that you'll be fine. So now I can tell you now, knowing him like a brother, like I know him, he's well believing, not showing it too much,
this
but he's
is a
well believing.
Because Michael's not coming.
I'm not very popular in Ireland anyway.
Are you not?
It's the accent.
No. Okay, well,
is the book selling in Ireland?
Well, it's on sale.
Michael, we're saving you for our next big one in London. Great. But can I tell you, drum roll-ish thing, please, that who will be joining us? See if you can guess. He's going to do an extra special hour-long DJ set beforehand. Can you guess?
David Guetta?
Actually, we didn't think of that.
Yeah.
We didn't think of that.
That's for the Paris gig.
Oh, yeah. Keep him for Paris.
Right. Only Pat Nevin. Pat Nevin's going to DJ and then join us on the panel.
Wow.
He's noted for his love of kind of indie.
He does a lot of indie club nights up in Shoreditch and places like that.
You expect him afterwards to say, boys, just follow me and take us to an amazing place somewhere in Dublin that no one knows, like underground.
Yeah, cut to March and what's actually happening. Yeah. We've sat around a chessboard.
But in terms of post-career stuff, that has to be one of the best.
Who?
Pat Nevin, being a DJ, after a football player.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean,
probably Lucas, George Weah's got him.
It's still better than Lucas Podolski opening a kebab shop in terms of post-career, you know, thing.
Each to his own, Jules. Anyway, if you want to be part of what promises to be an absolutely extraordinary night, 19th of March is the date that you need to circle in red or any other colour you choose in your diary. 19th of March at Vicar Street in Dublin. And you can actually get your tickets already at ticketmaster.ie. That's Totally Football Live in Dublin with Pat Nevin and other people, but Pat Nevin. Okay, right. Football League, big news this week. Chris Powell is back. Shall we hear what our friend and Southend fan Ian McIntosh had to say about it in this week's Totally Football League show, which you can download now?
It's not just bringing back a former player. It's not just bringing back a manager who's excelled in this division before and at a higher level. It's also about having someone in charge of your club that you love, that you're proud of, that you feel can represent you and everyone like you. It's felt feeling that you're a part of this all together. And Chris Powell, for me and for many Southend fans of my age, was a boyhood hero. And to have something like this happening, it's just, happy day.
Yeah, more of that kind of thing available on the Football League show. You can also, if you wish, download Golazzo, which this week it features basically you, me and Gab Marcotti talking about Maldini and forgetting to discuss Dzeko and Emerson Palmieri.
But we did that today.
We
saved
that today,
it for today. Sounds like a great podcast.
Oh, yeah. To be fair, it's kind of amazing. There's a little bit of an 80s Italian music in it.
Yeah, there was Lazio love, and as soon as we published it, they went and scored 3 goals against Udinese.
That's now 13 goals in 3 games.
Yeah, 56 for
Here's
the season.
A question, actually. And where is that question?
Without Chiro as well. Not Chiro.
Sorry?
No Immobile as well.
Right, okay, absolutely. What is the Immobile riddle, though, asks Box Armour. He scores shed loads in City. I didn't work anywhere else. And he also says, Wilshire to Juve. Is that a thing?
Well, he's free, isn't he? So I think now, whenever someone's contract is winding down, they just say, well, Juve love a freebie, don't they?
Yeah. Right, okay. What is the Immobile riddle, then?
Having a striker as your coach. Simone Inzaghi. I think we touched upon this in Golazzo, but one of his real strengths is knowing how to put players in the right condition to succeed. Gab was saying, for example, that Milinkovic-Savic has a very unusual skill set. It's very difficult to find a position for him, but Inzaghi has, and he's done exactly the same with Immobile, which is sort of just not asking him to do too much, just concentrate on playing on the shoulder of the final defender, and we'll basically put the ball in behind for you every time, and that's to his strengths.
All right. Well, you can see. Well, you might not be able to see Immobile in action. I'm not sure if he's going to be back for the game this weekend. But you can see Lazio, the Simone Inzaghi goal machine, that's roaring up into the top positions. Are they third now?
They are.
They are third. You can see them take on Milan on Sunday. Is it Sunday night, that game?
It should be.
It should be Sunday night. Have a look at local listings. Listeners, if you want to catch a bit of that Lazio Milan, you know.
It's worth it.
Thanks. Or watch some French football after that amazing Lyon PSG game last weekend. What have you got this time around?
We've got a big Marseille-Monaco, actually.
Ah.
Yeah. And Monaco won 6-1 in the reverse fixture back in September. So Marseille, and we won their revenge.
Right, OK. Who's your money on this? It's third against fourth.
Third against fourth. Obviously, the fight for second with Lyon is huge, yeah, because PSG are going to win the league, so it'd be very interesting. Marseille in top form, sorry. Uh-huh. Monaco, not so much. I would have to go for Marseille.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
But and they're at home as well, aren't
they? Yeah, yeah. It'd be a great game.
Great. Paris Saint-Germain, meanwhile, are going to be taking on Montpellier. Will Neymar have some mysterious injury for that, or will he turn up this time?
Maybe. I'm trying to think what he hasn't come up with for an injury. So, yeah, we had the toe, we had the ribs, we had the thigh, we had the ankle. Something with his shoulder, maybe, his elbow or his finger, I don't know. Something.
Really? Has it become a bit of an issue, Jules?
Yes, they're saying that they're wrapping him into wool. Is that
cotton
what you're saying?
Wool,
cotton,
yeah.
Wool, yeah, because of the World Cup, because of the Real Madrid game. That's the most important.
But what are Paris Saint-Germain fans saying about all this? Are they, especially with the loss last weekend without him against Lyon, are they a bit disgruntled at suggesting a lack of commitment or something?
Yeah, I think some are a bit suspicious that that's the case. Some, I think, fear that he's clearly realised that Ligue 1 is not for him, that France is not for him, and that he would want to leave very soon. Some just think that he's the world's third best player, so you should not take any risk and all precautions with him. So even if he has a little niggle, don't take him even to a game as big as the one in Lyon, and just keep him for the big, big games like the Real Madrid one,
Real
for example.
Real Madrid, yeah.
So sort of like, make sure that it doesn't play too much before that, or things like that. I don't know. It's fascinating.
It's like your best china.
It
you
is.
Don't get it out for tea time on a school night.
Yeah. But the other big narrative, obviously, that PSG Montpellier is Edinson Cavani, who is just level with Zlatan Ibrahimovic as the club's all-time goal scorer, top scorer. So one more goal and it'll be above Ibra. Although he's taking more games. Ibra scored 156 in 180. And Cavani will be his 229th game, and he's on 156 as well. But he's played a lot of the time when Ibra was there wide as well. So it'd be great for, I think, Cavani to beat that record.
You mentioned Real Madrid, who are PSG's opponents at a couple of weeks' time in the Champions League. Of course, midweek for them didn't go so well. Knocked out of the cup by little Leganés.
Can we have a collective laugh?
Right. Julian.
Real Madrid. No, because I'm still convinced they're going to knock us out of the Champions League.
Jules, but Zidane.
He's from Marseille, so I don't.
Oh.
No. It's sad, but for the first time in their history, in their whole history and history of the Copa del Rey, before when they've won away, they've never lost then at home to get knocked out, and it was the first time yesterday.
It is funny when those big spending clubs from foreign capitals lose, isn't it? I always really enjoy it.
I know you hate them and you hate PSG. But I guarantee you, I love, and it was sarcastic, but Real Madrid are going to beat PSG in the Champions League. I'm telling you right now.
Okay. What a story. Leganés coming up from the third division in the last, 5 years, getting into top flight and getting into a semi-final and knocking out Real Madrid at the Bernabeu.
And they're doing well in La Liga, the 13th in La Liga as well.
Are they?
I mean, there's the point that Zidane surely underestimated them last night. To put all those players, even leading at home or on the bench, and even the one on the bench coming so late when you were clearly in trouble to be knocked out, it was really strange from him. He might have his reasons, but it looked strange.
Also in Spain, Javier Mascherano saluting the Liga and heading off to China. After 8 years at Barcelona, he's joining up with Manuel Pellegrini at Hebei, China. Did you know Manuel Pellegrini was in China?
Only once I read the news reports.
Okay.
It's slightly strange timing, I think, ahead of a World Cup. You think I know he wasn't playing much for Barcelona, but I'm not sure he'll be, properly tested in China. But he's been a fantastic player for Barcelona. I mean, we all thought it was a bit of a strange move when he went there just after Spain had won the World Cup. We said, how is he going to get into that midfield? Obviously, played in defence. And with a couple of notable exceptions, he's barely been caught out in terms of, his height is an obvious issue for playing centre-back, but he's so good positionally. Very good tackler, which we don't really say much for centre-backs at clubs like Barcelona because they play so high up the pitch. I've just really, really enjoyed watching him at Barcelona.
He'll be joining Jovinho and Lavezzi.
Are they at that team?
Yeah, they are.
Hebei trying a fortune.
We go to make a fortune.
Yeah.
Jovinho and Lavezzi in the same
happy,
team.
Lavezzi's done really well, actually, after a bad start. Lavezzi's done really well.
In China?
Yeah.
Petty
for Hebei Fortuna.
All right. Save the rest for our Chinese spin-off pod. Here's a question from Tom Byfield. On a scale of 1 to 10, just how dreadful is that? Leeds crest. 1, on Tom's scale, is slightly counterintuitively Juve's J crest, and 10, being Cardiff City's red shirt, so the lower number. But anyway, you get what he means. It's extraordinary, I would say. Somebody did mention it to me in the course, you know, apropos of nothing. Oh, did you see the Leeds crest? And I thought, that's quite niche. And then they showed it to me and I realised why they'd brought it up.
What's so niche about it is it's someone who is then hiding a crest.
That's true.
On the crest, so it's like...
But I think the gesture is the crest, and I think that's what's left most people distressed, because the gesture does seem to be very much... I mean, anyone who's spent time in Rome recognises it very much as a kind of proto-fascist strength and honour.
But that is a Leeds salute. You bash your chest three times and say, Leeds is Leeds. And, you know, if you see someone who's a Leeds fan, you do it, and it's a sign of recognition. I don't think it hasn't got... Obviously, any kind of salute has fascist connotations, but
right.
I think the problem here was when they actually did... the consultancy with these 10,000 fans or whatever, they didn't ask them, what would you like to see on a badge? They said, what do you as Leeds fans most associate or feel is iconic about this club? And a lot of them put the salute.
In that case, we're quite lucky that they came up with a salute. Could have put all sorts of things on that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think they'll actually stay with it?
They've said that they've taken into account the reaction on social media.
Okay.
They will review it.
Okay.
So.
It's a pretty dreadful badge.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I mean, when Juventus changed their badge, their kind of rationale was that they wanted to transcend kind of having just a football badge in the same way that you have, I don't know, like people wear Yankees hats even though they're not Yankees fans because they just like the emblem. And that J for Juventus, it works in that kind of way, I suppose. And now, after a year of it, I think it's actually really good. But that Leeds badge, I mean, you... You would never go around thinking this is some kind of fashion statement I'm wearing, you know?
Listeners, do you like shaving and looking smooth and clean?
Yes!
But do you enjoy having to go to the shops for new razors and other shaving supplies?
No!
Well, Cornerstone gives you everything you need for a great shave, and they'll deliver it all right to your door. Cornerstone's super sharp, award-winning blades are engineered in Germany, which is always a good sign, and their range of balms, creams and exfoliators are all environmentally friendly, alcohol-free and suitable for the most sensitive skin. Get £10 off your first order and check out the range for yourself at cornerstone.co.uk/totally and find out why tens of thousands of men have switched over to Cornerstone.
International news. I'm sure people have been asking us about this. Michael O'Neill has turned down the Scotland job. They're still without a manager, Scotland. He's going to stay at Northern Ireland instead. Martin O'Neill has signed a new long-term contract along with Roy Keane to stay at Ireland, which means that Keane will be taking on his former teammate Ryan Giggs when Ireland meet Wales in League B Group 4 of the Nations League. Other teams in there are Denmark... So that's it. So it's just basically, I'm confused already. Michael Cox. Michael Cox, for the fifth time this week. Yeah. Can you explain what on earth's going on?
Yeah, with the groups of three at the top, and you'll play every team twice. This is really happening. And there'll be promotion from those three team groups, from B and C and D. And then at the top, if you win your group as one of the... League A teams, then you'll go into a semi-final and final at the end of next season, the start of June, and then whoever wins the final will be crowned the UEFA Nations League winner.
The UEFA Final Four.
Wow.
That's what it's called.
Well, you're not the only one who's excited by this. Here's a tweet. UEFA Nations League using existing international dates to play competitive games instead of friendlies with promotion relegation. A good idea. Oh, no, that's from you.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So, Ireland are in with Wales in League B Group 4. So they would get promoted to League A.
If they win. Yeah.
If they win, so they're in there. And Northern Ireland are in with Bosnia Herzegovina and Austria, who may or may not feature Ashley Barnes. I remain bewildered. Not quite as bewildered, thanks to your efforts. But I'm still, I guess, it's a bit like when someone's trying to teach you a card game. You just have to play a few rounds just to get the hang
exactly.
of it.
I agree. Right. The feeding into Euro qualification does make it a little bit complex.
Right.
But I think the problem there is that you've got to get the 24 teams in. Mm. You know, however you do it, I thought the qualifying for last year was a bit rubbish, really.
Yeah. Fair enough. Anyway, England have Croatia and Spain. They're already in League A. France are in a League A group. Scotland, did I mention they're in League C, poor things, with Albania and Israel. France are with Holland and Germany. That's big. Italy have qualified for this, James. They're in with Poland and Portugal. That's a group of death right there.
Can easily go down to League B, though.
Where?
I think that's quite the. I think that could be more exciting than who wins it. Going down to League B will be
humiliation.
Humiliation.
So that's the key thing. It's relegation, international relegation. That's exciting.
Promotion and relegation, I think, is
because
quite cool.
Because you said Scotland, poor thing, they're in League C. They can easily win that group against Israel and Albania, finish top.
Yeah.
And then they might play, I don't know, Greece.
Have you seen Scotland?
Bulgaria, but, you know. And so,
I'm joking.
And then being able to be promoted to League B, and suddenly League B, you have better games and, you know, better opposition.
I get it. Promotion, yeah. Okay.
That sounded like a voiceover for, like, the Scottish tourist. Have you seen Scotland?
All right. Anyway, let's move back on to the FA Cup after this.
Gentlemen, are you feeling a bit crap? Well, you're not alone. Everyone does at some point. But the thing people don't realise is just how common it is in chaps like you and me. Last year, 76% of all the suicides in Britain were male. That's 4,287 men, a figure not much smaller than the average League Two attendance last season. On average, 12 men take their own life every single day, meaning that the leading cause of death for men under 45 in the UK is suicide. Scary, huh? But that's part of the problem. There's still a strong social stigma around depression and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and seeking help when they need it. That's why we at the Totally Football Shows are working with Calm. They're the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide in the UK. Every day from 5pm till midnight, they provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. They've also got a website and a free magazine packed with the kind of information you need if you or any of your mates are having a rough time, as well as some cracking stuff on comedy, bands, film and, of course, football too. So if you are feeling crap, find Calm at thecalmzone.net for support and some straight-up manspiration.
FA Cup fourth round. Now, we've mentioned some fixtures, but I bet there's loads of other ones that you guys are excited about that you want to talk about now, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, there's one all Premier League one between Southampton and Watford, which
is so true.
Interesting.
Come on, let's go into giant killing stuff.
We can have your turn in a second, Julien. Hold your horses. Let's discuss what will be the first game in charge for Saints' new boss. For Watford's new boss, Javi Gracia.
Yeah,
I think Saints, and we've been anticipating so long that they would be the team to make that change. But yeah.
Could Watford's old boss be the Saints' new boss after this game if Mauricio Pellegrino loses this one?
Yeah.
That's a question. There's also
the game at Watford was really exciting, wasn't it? 2-2. Recently.
And
lots of handballs that weren't given and stuff.
Last minute goals from Doucouré.
Oh yeah.
Southampton making some moves in the transfer window at the moment.
Are they?
About to sign a player from Monaco for about 22 million euro.
Who's that then?
Yeah, Guido Carrillo.
Oh right, okay.
Yeah, a good rip off.
I'm sorry?
A good rip off. Yeah, Monaco bestsellers in the world, managing to get 22 million euros for Guido Carrillo is pretty spectacular.
Is that really good, is it?
He's not very good.
But the money is
amazing. I mean, it's not that he's not very good, Saints fans. Yeah. And it's just that he hasn't worked out for him. And Monaco, he's only scored, I think, 5 goals the first season, 8 the last one. He's on 8 now. But he used to work with Pellegrino back in Argentina in Estudiantes, so they know each other really well. And he's a fighter. He's very good in the air. That's his main asset, is the strength he has in his air, probably in the air, probably the best header of the ball in French football.
Oh.
But 22 million is a lot of money.
Well, not these days, it's not just.
It is. Yeah.
But it shows that they're backing the manager because, as you say, he's worked under Pellegrino before. You wouldn't necessarily spend that kind of money if you think that guy's not going to be around.
And he could potentially score goals if you put crosses in the box, because if you don't...
It feels like Monaco are in the situation that Porto were a few years ago, where they've produced so many good players last few years that people just instinctively say, hey, let's go to Monaco for their next
very
big player.
True.
And you just get loads of money for kind of
average
players. They're
like Waitrose or something like that.
Yeah, because Waitrose, they do some really bad stuff. For example, their pistachio nuts are dreadful. They're really expensive as well. Don't go near them.
Really?
Yeah.
I love Waitrose. And Slimani could replace Carrillo at Monaco.
Really?
Islam Slimani from Leicester.
Because I've heard him link with Newcastle, I think.
Yeah, but
Monaco, you think Monaco is more likely?
Yeah, I think they might try.
Okay, but anyway, Jules, you're keen to talk about giant killing. How about Friday night's clash at Huish Park as Yeovil
I know.
Yeovil, who are only 2 points off the relegation zone at the foot of League Two, basically teetering on the brink of non-league football, take on one of the biggest clubs in the world.
Manchester United.
Yeah.
Maybe Alexis Sanchez. Imagine his debut for United.
Wow.
What's the name of the stadium you say, Yeovil?
Hewish Park.
I don't even know where Yeovil is.
Somerset.
Somerset.
Alexis probably never heard of Yeovil either, but this is perfect. That's what we love about the FA Cup.
Mm.
And you know what? They're going to play really deep. They're going to... You can imagine the pitch maybe not being the greatest. Let's hope it rains as well, a bit of wind. And suddenly you make it really hard for them, and that's what's good about it.
Excellent, Jules.
Yeah. So I can't wait for the defeat of United at Yeovil, the defeat of Leicester at Peterborough, the defeat of Brighton at Middlesbrough.
What about
defeat
Spurs of Swansea, at Newport?
Spurs at Newport and West Ham at Wigan and City at Cardiff. And then...
Boom. Newport, sorry, go on.
Oh, no, Peterborough against Leicester.
Peterborough-Leicester, that's where we're going next.
Peterborough have that amazing player, isn't it? That
Jack Marriott.
Yeah, Jack Marriott is on fire.
Yeah, is he? Right,
top scorer in League One.
Yeah.
He's been linked with Palace. And
literally every shot is a goal, pretty much.
Really?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Of course, Leicester have a bit of form. Claude Puel with the FA Cup, he took Southampton to.
He rotates a lot in the...
That was the League Cup.
Against Fleetwood, for example. He's been hot in the FA Cup.
Has he?
Oh, yeah. His name is on the cup.
Well, you know, you were talking about odds. I believe that outside of the, you know, City and United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Spurs, they're the big clubs, apart from Arsenal, not in it anymore, that Leicester are the kind of the bookies' favourite outsider for this.
Mm.
Yeah. Although they did need a replay and a little bit of VAR love to get past Fleetwood in the last round, so... Okay. You're right, Jules.
It rotates a lot.
Okay. I keep trying to talk about Newport County taking on Spurs. And Newport, also known as the Exiles and the Ironsides. Did you know that?
Not the Ironsides, but that's a good...
If that's right, producer Ben came up with that.
Oh.
They beat Leeds in the previous round.
Where are they exiled from?
I don't know. Again... Producer Ben came up with that. They're unbeaten in six in League and Cup. These are all Producer Ben's FA Cup notes, actually. What do you think? Newport, was that one of your jewels?
Okay. Mrs. L being Welsh, we all always for the Welsh.
Peterborough taking on Leicester, who's done that. Hull Forest, have we done that? Forest, who beat Arsenal, now managed by Aitor Karanka, beat Wolves at the weekend. Hull have only won one match in 8 matches. That was the previous round against Blackburn. It was a 1-0 win. That's the only goal they've scored this year. They're fourth bottom in the Championship.
Well, they got rid of Slutsky, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And brought in Nigel Adkins.
Yes.
Who'd got Southampton promoted. And then, you know, Southampton clearly got it wrong by sacking him to appoint that guy. What's his name? Pochettino. Hull, genuine risk of double relegations if they're not careful.
Mm.
I think that one of the big problems Slutsky found was, not really doing a lot in the transfer market. Because when they went down before, they managed to keep the squad that they had in the Premier League together. That hasn't happened this time around, and they're really struggling.
Okay, Wigan are taking on West Ham.
Yeah, West Ham about to sign João Mário from Inter. Yeah.
Good signing, do you think?
West Ham have got to hope that Inter are making the same mistake here as they did with Roberto Carlos and Coutinho.
That's so true.
Because he's got a lot of pedigree, João Mário. He was part of the Portugal team that...
Michael's having a chuckle, I have to warn you.
Went to the under-21 Euros, lost in the final.
Uh-huh.
Obviously was part of the team that won the Euros at senior level.
Can't remember that.
But he's one of those really strange players that Portugal seems to be creating a lot at the moment, which are guys who are essentially number 10s but love to play out wide. So Bernardo Silva fits in that kind of thing. Problem for him at Inter is that out wide they play Perisic and they play Candreva. But even then, he could never find a position in the team. But that's not to say he's not a good player. As I said, he's got pedigree. He's only 25.
Yeah, a little touch that Moyes fairy dust.
Exactly.
What were you going to say, Michael?
Why were you laughing?
No, I was just laughing because it's a little bit hard. I mean, Roberto Carlos and Coutinho were like 20 years apart, nearly, or the best part of it. So I think it's a little bit harsh to frame them as kind of serial offenders and letting players go.
No, but it's funny how two of the worst bits of business ever done by a club, certainly in Italy, would be there. You've also got, I suppose, letting Pirlo go on a free to Milan. That would be up there.
No, that wasn't a free, was it?
No,
it was a million or something. Yeah.
Creative accounting was going on.
Yeah. No, just the thing I was going to say, it's funny with that Portuguese thing, because, of course, they used to, they still do produce no forwards, but loads of wingers.
Yeah. Mm.
But now the wingers play out front, so the central midfielders have to play out wide.
Yeah.
It's just a knock-on effect that's going to go through the team and produce very weird football teams.
But, I mean, Moyes is playing, 3-4-2-1? So, again, I don't really see a position for him there unless he's plays where, I mean, he loves to play on the left and coming on the right. That's Lanzini's position. So it's an interesting one. Inter basically spent so much money on him, 35 million, and they're just delighted to get it back. So
if they get it back.
Yeah, I mean, it's a loan with a, I think, I don't know whether they've got an obligation to buy, but it's 35 million euro. So
has it been confirmed yet, or is it still kind of being worked on?
It's still being worked on, but they're confident that it's going to happen.
Okay. West Ham, as we mentioned, are going to be at Wigan this weekend. Wigan, of course, feature Will Grigg, is on fire. 12 goals? Yeah.
And West Ham are without both Arnautovic and Lanzini.
Yeah. Is that right?
Getting their goals, so, yeah.
Right, so, and Lanzini, was it hamstring? Arnautovic, though, is he definitely out for this weekend?
I believe he is, but I'm not sure what with.
Right, I think haven't only City and United won more league games than Wigan this season in all of the...
Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
They're 5 points clear at the top of League One, so you might be correct in that. And of course, they won the FA Cup not so long ago.
With Roberto.
Crazy days those were. Borough are taking on Brighton. Brighton have one win in 14. They failed to score in their last 10. They may give a start to the £14 million signing of Jurgen Locadia. Or is it Locadia?
Locadia.
Locadia, former Dutch under-21 striker. Chelsea taking on Newcastle, Jules.
Yes. I mean, Chelsea's form, apart from the game at Brighton, it's been pretty dire this calendar year, since the turn of the year. So,
it's been pretty good whenever they've hosted Newcastle, though.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and this is quite interesting because what they've been doing in their transfer window, you know, Kennedy's just going to Newcastle, which means Emerson Palmieri will come from Roma.
Yeah, and how do you rate that as a as an addition to their squad, Emerson Palmieri?
Emerson, he was one of the most improved players in Serie A last year, one of the best left backs. I mean, to get him for 20 million,
that's his share of the 44 for him and Dzeko, is it?
Yes, and I think that's quite cheap, and I think one of the reasons why it is because he did his ACL on the last game of last season, which a lot of people forgot about because it was Totti's final game. And that was doubly emotional for him because he'd also just received his first call-up to the Italy squad.
Right.
Because Italy was so impressed by him, they were like, here, have a passport, we want you to play for us. So I think that's a sign of how highly he was regarded.
It's a heartwarming story, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard to play this year, though.
Yeah, because Kolarov has been an absolute revelation, and this guy's coming back from an ACL. So I think if Kolarov hadn't been as good as he has been... They would think twice about selling him because he's been very good.
I bet Chelsea are glad that Kolarov's not coming to Stamford Bridge. Remember what happened last time?
Yeah.
Anyway, he did really well in the Champions League. Of course, if he was coming to join, then that would be different.
That's why they're signing Dzeko.
Yeah.
Of course.
Mark McBride asks, has there ever been a pair of twins eliminated from the FA Cup in consecutive ties by the same club? Because this could happen to Josh and Jacob Murphy against Chelsea. They are twins. One plays for Norwich.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the other plays for Newcastle.
Did we not do this last week?
Yeah, Ben chopped it out. But now he wants to do it again, so he can chop it out again.
Sorry.
So you have the answer? You know the answer?
Do you know the answer? What is the answer?
Well, I don't think there is an answer.
Is there an answer?
No one has done it before, no?
Well, we didn't have an answer. We just mentioned
this is one of the things where people, like... You say, do you want any? Have you got any questions?
Yeah.
But people just got really good facts, but they have to phrase it as a question.
Yes.
And then we have to say, what's the answer? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. yes, Mark McBride, probably not. Good. On the Julesometer of likeliness of an upset win, where does that one stand?
10%.
Really?
Yeah, I can't see them.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, speaking of likelihoods and probabilities, having chatted about all the football, let's get Paddy Power's odds with Ian McIntosh.
Thanks, James. I'm here with Mr. Paddy Power for our FA Cup sets. Paddy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you getting on?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Got some great fixtures here. First up, Cardiff City against Manchester City. City were really put to the test in midweek, and Cardiff have only conceded one in their last four. Is there something on here?
There might be a chance, you know what? I mean, because we know the City are not unbeatable, so they obviously got stuffed by Liverpool, and like you said, they kind of struggled midweek, but they've been struggling through that cup the whole way, haven't they? It's like they take their foot off the gas for it. But Cardiff are 9-1 at home, which is very, very similar odds as Bristol City were against Man City. It didn't work out for them, but City are 1-4, and the draw is 9-2 there. So if you're looking for an upset, like a proper, like a draw would be an upset, but a Cardiff win would be a proper upset. That's a 9-1 shot, and it could happen. And I mean, if you asked me this 2 weeks ago, I'd be going, actually, there's no chance that happens. City are just going to win all before them, and they probably will go and win the cup. They'll probably win the quadruple at that. But if they've just shown a little bit of fallibility, I guess.
Man United are going to need to show a lot of fallibility if they're going to slip up at Yeovil. What a place for Sanchez to start his United career.
Yeah, he's going to love that, isn't he? I mean, some of the big players have started some inauspicious places. But yeah, so they're 18-1 anyway, Yeovil, for a massive, massive upset. This would be like one of those kind of Leicester winning the league type upsets, I think. United are 1-8, but can you just imagine being a Yeovil fan, seeing United come down there, and imagine even nil all after, you know, 50 or 60 minutes, if you kind of go, geez, we have a chance here, lads. It'd be just amazing, wouldn't it?
I'll tell you they've had some drama there. They've had a rogue drone. They've had a player push the referee over and get banned. So it wouldn't be out of place there, but 18-1. All right.
Yeah, 18-1.
Let's have a look.
Sticky quid.
All right, one team I can see getting brought down to earth, West Ham. They'd spent two games and extra time trying to get past Shrewsbury, and now they've got Wigan, who have been just ahead of Shrewsbury for the last couple of months in League One. There's an upset there, isn't there?
The thing is, I don't even know if it'd be considered an upset. Because I mean, if you look at the betting on the game, it's like Wigan are 6-4, West Ham are 9-4, and the draw are 9-5 rather, and the draw is 9-4. So it means there's kind of nothing between them, you know, really. So you could kind of call it an upset if Wigan are favourites for the game. Put it that way, do you know what I mean? So it's not going to be it's not really an upset either way. I think a draw is probably the most likely outcome after 90 minutes, probably.
Okay, well, the biggest upset, surely, would be Newport against Tottenham. What can we get just for Newport taking the lead against Tottenham?
Yeah, I think, and funny enough, they're a shorter price than Yeovil are against. You know, they're 17-1 to win the match. But just to take the lead against Tottenham, which is what we'd all want to see to make a game of it, but they're 4-1 to take the lead at any stage. But, you know, it might give you a shout for the first 15 or 20 minutes of the game or something like that to see. But yeah, that would be enough. But it's no good taking the lead and then get beaten 6-1, is it? So they have to go and finish the job, I think.
As ever, you can find out all those odds and many more at paddypower.com. It is 18 plus only, and begambleaware.org. Also, when the fun stops, stop. And that's where we come to the end of today's Totally Football Show. Many thanks to Julien Laurent
Thank
for being with
much.
Us today. James Horncastle, off to do some moving in
Yorkshire,
somewhere.
Countryside.
In the countryside,
yes.
All right. And Michael Cox, moving and shaking and mixing as well.
Very nice.
With your book, The Mixer, paperback of which.
That's the worst. That's the worst. Goodbye.
Good.
With good.
Yeah. Anyway, Totally Football Show returns on Monday, all things being equal. If you're hungry for more football chat, remember there's the Football League Show and Golazzo, also available. Or if you just wanted to hear about movies, you could always listen to Truth and Movies, you know. Anyway, that is it for this edition of the show. Have a great weekend. Catch you Monday.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.